Season 5, Episode 17, Speak for Yourself, Bruce Clayton. It starts with Sipowicz and Simone walking through a hospital, and Sipowicz is hating on doctors, thinking they're playing golf and not talking about their patients.
Is that a thing?
What, doctors talking about golf?
Yeah, because I, as I've grown up and people I've known through high school and gotten to know, I know quite a few doctors, like maybe like 7 or 8, and none of them like playing golf.
I just love the idea that you're trying to like humble brag that you know doctors.
Oh, well, why? But like, why is that a brag though? Like, I'm not a doctor, so like, why,
I know
like just... a lot of people know doctors.
It's true. So, there's a lot of them.
Like, you know a bunch of doctors.
Yeah, I do. I know a doctor of history, so he can't help you, but he'll talk about history.
Well, he can bore you to death with facts. He can Kevorkian you.
I can't remember exactly what period of history he's a doctor of, but it's definitely not the one lots of people are interested in. I remember reading it once and going, yeah, there's not a whole lot of inspiring conversation coming out of that era. But no, I think that the idea is, like, just golf is, like, a sign of wealth because it costs so much fucking money to play, and it's such a leisure activity. They're like, oh, doctor's rich. And I think Sipowicz just associates golf with, like, callous, what's the word? Callous unfeeling for your patients, I guess? I don't know. It was just Sipowicz hating on doctors because he has to see one for his cancer.
Yeah, because one doctor, like, broke the doctor-patient code to, like, save his fucking life. And Sipowicz is pissed off at him about it.
Yeah, at the end of the scene, we talk to that doctor. Because that doctor, that's another thing. There's, like, little hints that this doctor's kind of an asshole. Because Sipowicz is like, yeah, I'm going to call you about the procedures. I'm going to do that later. It's going to happen, but I'm working right now. And then the doctor just grabs him and is like, I'm going to talk to you right now. And it's like, motherfucker, he is a homicide detective. It might be important for him to fucking leave.
Yeah, I get that. I'm with you on it. Uh-huh. I get that part. But at the same time, like, it feels like this doctor's been trying to talk to Sipowicz about, like, the most deadly cancer for men for like 2 weeks, and Sipowicz ignored him. So it's, you have to be, like, I think, vigilant with Sipowicz.
He also apologizes. Essentially, you're right, he broke doctor-patient confidentiality by calling his wife and telling his wife that he has a tumor in his prostate. There's a little bit of foreshadowing about the relationship between Sipowicz and this man, but this man kind of, like, hears, oh, you're working? Oh, you really don't have time to talk? Okay, I'm going to talk to you anyway. Which is fine. I mean, it didn't like, really ruin. Had to tell Sip or Simone. He just has to tell his partner that he has a tumor in his prostate. But something else super important happens in the beginning of this episode that we have to get to. They get a DOA and a woman who has been shot in the head, but it grazed her head. Which really highlights that the dude doing the shooting is a terrible shot.
Yeah, because they were up close, right?
It was supposed to be execution style, and he grazed her head. So he really doesn't know what he's doing. And the woman, Andrea... No, wait, what's the name? I think Andrea died. And there's a whole lot of names in the beginning of this, so it's hard to keep them all together. It's Patricia Lawton is the DOA... And Kara Wilson was the one who has a bullet graze.
And where'd you get Andrea from?
I don't know. I think it's because I read Antoine wrong. It's early in the morning. I'm drinking coffee. What I also wanted to mention about, like, I want to mention, like, several things. So the uniform officer that runs it down, okay, Patricia Lawton died. Kara Wilson has a wound in her head after a bad execution attempt. He's like, and they had 2 sticks of reefer. And it's like, is that really important? Like, we're talking about, I understand why he had to say it, but he's like, and I got 2 sticks of reefer, to which Simone jokingly is like, which you will voucher. Ha ha ha. Sometimes cops just take the drugs.
Wait, what year is this? Like, did the word joint not exist?
It's 97, I think. 98.
Like, did the word, which isn't true, which we know isn't true, because I think I've heard like Sipowicz or Andy use the word joint before.
This one kid, like, is from a time capsule,
and this is like a younger kid too. He's not like a Mike Shannon type. He looks like a younger, like, beat cop. And so for him to use the word, like, sticks of reefer was kind of interesting to me.
He was going to say Mary Jane or that grass.
She's got some of that sticky icky.
Some of that dank. Some of that Dr. J. So when they go to talk to Kara, I want to remind everybody, she has been shot and an attempt was made on her life. They go up to Kara and they're like, okay, so what happened? And she says, well, 6 to 7 dudes took me and my friend and gang raped us in an apartment, then took us to the roof and tried to murder us. Because I went out with Antoine twice, and while they were raping us, they said, this is for going out with Antoine and being his girl. Now, I don't know, but getting snippy and short with this woman doesn't seem cool.
No. She wasn't dating Antoine. She was dating some other guy.
No, she said she went out with Antoine twice. And they were like, oh, you're Antoine's girl.
Right. So, Antoine's the dude in the wheelchair, right?
No.
That's Jamal. Okay, never mind. I got my black names mixed up, racist.
Jamal was shot by Antoine and was put in the chair.
Yes. I got the names mixed up. I got it now. I'm on board.
So she lets them know she was gang raped and almost murdered, and her friend the same, because of this Antoine character. And Sipowicz and Simone are being, like, really short, like, okay, well, who's Antoine? Well, who's Jamal? So what's happening? It's like, she was just raped by 6 to 7 dudes.
Yeah, and then someone put a gun to her head and tried to shoot her.
And the way Sipowicz and Simone are like, okay, I mean, a little less attitude. It's like, what the fuck? What are you talking about? She's like, if anything, you guys should calm the fuck down.
Or if anything, you should care a little bit more about the situation that's at hand.
She gives them that whole story and says, oh, it was Jamal's apartment, and gives a very specific location, and said one dude took his mask off to let us know that we were going to die. And then they were on their way. And as they're walking out of the room that she was in, Sipowicz is like, oh, the cross on that door kind of takes care of the ugliness that happened inside. No, it didn't. No, it doesn't. Hey, look, there's a statue of a Buddha during this gang rape. Suddenly that makes the gang rape less intense.
Well, it's that old Christian, you know, like, thought that, like, as long as there's a cross in the room, rape's good. As long as Jesus and God are watching it happen, then at least they're cool with it.
Anyway, this is, that's also the scene where, right after that, Sipowicz walks out of that room, runs into his doctor. His doctor insists on talking to Sipowicz about the situation. Bobby then pries because he's concerned, and Sipowicz lets him know that he has a tumor, and now Bobby is concerned, which he would be because he lost his wife to a spontaneous terminal disease.
Spontaneous terminal disease. I saw them play a show once.
They were playing with municipal waste.
Yeah. It was the thrash metal fest. It was great.
Anyway, this is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, go through every single episode of the best show ever, NYPD Blue, and this is the theme song to NYPD Blue. Alright, when we come back from the break, it's actually a Russell Kirkendall and Metavoy joint, but we'll get to that later, because that's actually the title's sake. A gentleman comes in with information, on that case, so we're not going to talk about him either. Sipowicz and Simone run down for Fancy what they have. And Fancy actually took a statement for Russell and Kirkendall's case, so he's like, took a statement, I'm going to go write a five. And Sipowicz says he takes one DD5 and he thinks he's Dick Tracy, which is hilarious because people probably don't even know who the fuck Dick Tracy is anymore. They go to take down the rape den. That's what I wrote down here to save space. Take down the rape den.
Right on.
They, you know, it's a standard thing where, you know, they have, like, essentially a SWAT team. And then Simone says to Sipowicz, are you okay to do this? So then Sipowicz gives him the walkie and breaks down the door. They break down the door. They get some gentlemen cuffed up. And then they ask where Jamal is. And they...
Sipowicz may have cancer, but it's never going to stop him from taking down a bunch of black kids. So
they go into the other room because they're told that's where Jamal is, and Jamal is a quadriplegic, played by Giancarlo Esposito, who, if you're a big fan of Breaking Bad, he was Gus Fring. He's in the new Far Cry. He was in an episode of Community, a couple episodes of Community. Great actor, pretty rad in everything that he's in. And he's playing Jamal, who is a quadriplegic, and Sipowicz, you know, super cool. He sees that...
He was also in NYPD Blue before.
Yep, he was in NYPD Blue before.
Did
as,
you say that? Maybe I missed it.
I did not.
He was a fucking... what did they do?
He was like
informant.
Yeah, he was like a dying informant that was robbing drug dealers.
He was his scores were getting bigger and bigger because he had the virus.
He had the virus. What was kind of, I mean, they obviously wrote this for humor, and it's pretty gross now. What's his name? Simone opens the door with the police don't move, and he's a quadriplegic. And then Sipowicz said, great, now we have to get that special van. Which is not cool. The next scene with them, they bring in a Spooky, which is one of Jamal's dudes, and they grill him for the rape. He's playing dumb until they mention the ski masks and that the woman lived. And he says, like, look, we take care of Jamal in that apartment. We don't do anything like that. And Sipowicz says, well, you know, that's their good deed. Who's going to begrudge them for an occasional rape? Which was just an awful line. Then Sipowicz straight up lies to him by saying that the woman said that she said his name twice on the roof just to get him to admit that something happened.
Yeah, that was that's a lie that's very, like, I know you can't trace that lie, and it's a small little, I feel like that's a small little, like, blip in the story that's the kid's not going to remember ever, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know, I don't feel like, Sipowicz has been toeing the line a lot this year with the shit he's been doing.
It's also a lie that clearly he didn't go over with Simone, because he said it, and then Simone kind of gives him a look like, okay, well, we're going in hard on them lies. And then he essentially says, okay, maybe it happened, but I definitely didn't kill the woman. And they said, well, who did? And he said, nah, I gotta represent. Which pisses off Sipowicz, who says, rise, Spooky, and that was kind of funny. They then go talk to Leon, which Spooky said Leon didn't do it either. And Leon is played by Pedro Silver? Is that his name?
No, Leon the Professional?
He's played by Fredro Starr. Why did I say that?
Yeah, Fredro Starr.
Who is a rapper, I guess, and producer, who has been in a couple of movies, and I could have swear I've seen him in something, and his known fors are movies I haven't seen.
Was he on Nick Cannon's Wildin' Out?
I don't know.
I thought you had the known fors pulled up, sorry.
Well, I do. I have it pulled up. I don't see that. But I see he made an appearance, like, on everything.
Yeah, he's been in a lot of things. He's also, I don't know if he's been in it before, or if he does make another, he shows up again on NYPD Blue. That's a different character.
Like, he was in 8 Mile, Blade, Torque, Save the Last Dance.
Okay. Save the Last Dance is where I remember him from.
He was also on The Wire.
What season?
Don't know. It was 2003 and 2. And he was Bird. Marquise Bird.
Oh, the beginning.
Marquise Bird Hilton.
First episodes. He's the one that Omar goes to testify against. And he wears, like, the tie he wears the tie over his, like, street clothes, and then that's when the whole scene of when the lawyer is, calls him a criminal, and then Omar says, it's like, yeah, but that's what you do, right? And then he has that whole scene where he basically says, like, yeah, I rip and rob drug dealers, but so do you. You just do it in a courtroom. Mm-hmm. That's the guy. It's Bird. He's the guy who loves his gun. Anyways, yeah.
So, yeah.
That's where I remember seeing him. Me and Maria just recently watched the first and second season, so yeah.
Fredro Starr. Been in a bunch of stuff. Also wanted to mention, because I have her name up here, the woman who played Kara in the beginning.
Yes.
Is Paula Jai Parker, who I could have swore I've seen her face before.
Yeah.
She's been in a bunch of shit I have not seen, which this is going to probably upset you, because she's been in Friday, which I haven't seen.
I saw Friday a long time ago. Really funny.
Hustle and Flow, which I haven't seen.
Never seen Hustle and Flow.
But then, the other movie that she's known for is the movie that I'd seen recently, called Phone Booth.
I've never seen Phone Booth.
And she plays a hooker in Phone Booth, and that movie is a good one watch. I would say it's a good one watch. Anyway, when they talk to Leon, when they walk in, he says it's skanky in here, which is weird. That's just a weird thing to say. They bring up the rapes, and he says, I don't need to do no rapes, to which Sipowicz says, oh, you're just staying in shape with these? Then they let him know that, like, they know about the ski mask, they know about the gang rape, and they know about the attempted murder, but they're pretty sure he's not the one that took off the mask, so they just want to know who that was.
Why would you take your mask off? You know what I mean? Like, whether or not you think they're going to live, or you're going to kill them, like, just never take your mask off to your home. That's like...
never until you're home.
Like, that's like bad guy 101, dude.
That's bad guy... That's first day shit of being an asshole. Well,
don't take your gloves off, and don't take your mask off until you're home.
A lot of things are said during this interview that make me scratch my head. One is, he gives up Jackson really quick, because as he said, we were taking him up to the roof, and I thought we were going to have more sex. You know...
Roof sex.
Because, you know, roof rape, a little RR, is different than in the apartment, I guess. The fresh air changes everything.
A little R&R is a little better than a little AR, you know what I mean?
And he then
said... You're out the stars, it's a little more intimate, you know, the girls can breathe the fresh air, you know?
He then says... They, like, because Sipowicz is like, oh, this, and you did this because this girl went out with Antoine maybe twice... Leon says, do you see Jamal in that chair? You call that right? No, but you know what? I don't call rape right either. So...
Yeah, I don't call... I don't think, like, raping two women who had, nothing to do with it is right. They didn't tell their boyfriends to go shoot Jamal. Like, they both were in a drug game. It's their problem. It's like, it is what it is. Like, this is the game you just guys decided to play.
And that part scratched my head. It's like, you see Jamal in that chair? You think that's right? That's why we raped women. that math doesn't add up there, Leon.
Because Antoine did something fucked up to Jamal, I have to go now fuck his girlfriend against her will and then kill her.
Yeah, it's ass. Leon says it was Jackson, a gentleman named Jackson, who said, well, we gotta kill them. And he's now in Richmond with one of their cousins. And while he's writing it up, Sipowicz says, so where was Jamal in all this? He's like, he didn't want to participate. He didn't tell us to do anything. And then he's like, well, what was he doing? He's like, he doesn't talk much. And then they, after they get that Jamal had nothing really to do with it, they go to run everything for Fancy. Sipowicz calls him the battery-powered dealer, which I thought would be a better title for this episode.
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't think you can.
You could get away with it in the 90s.
Very true. Very true. There's a lot of... You're right. I forget what they've already gotten away with. So.
you can get away with that.
Someone just said the N-word 3 or 4 times. So. And he's like said like spook. He said like he's done the thing where he like rubbed his face. Like he's done you can get away with it. Never mind.
So they say... Because now they're... Their case is wrapped up. So, in essence, they should be done with. But instead, they say, we're going to try and move Jamal on the original shooting that put him in the wheelchair that caused the rapes, which I wrote down here, why. Like, that's not the case they have. They're essentially done, but they want to move him on the other shooting, because I guess just so we can have Giancarlo act.
Well, because Antoine was never charged, right?
No.
What they probably want to do, thinking how they do as cops, they probably don't want anything to escalate more. And now, because Antoine has gone after this guy's girlfriends, and
well,
Jamal's
boys went after his girlfriend because of Antoine.
Because of Antoine, this is going to go farther. So I don't know. Maybe he's thinking like, we just need to get Antoine off the street or get this over with. Like, make sure that this doesn't escalate any farther.
After they run it for Fancy, he asks Simone, like, later I'm going to get this whole thing diagrammed. Because, I mean, you just experienced it now. It's like Antoine shot Jamal because of drug dealing. Jamal, who's in the wheelchair, has these boys. These boys decide, hey, you know what solves this problem? Rape. So they go and rape and attempt to murder two
and
women.
Antoine wants nothing to do with it. He doesn't even want to be involved. He doesn't even want to, like...
Jamal doesn't want to be involved.
A creepy guy who sits there and watches and, like, takes pride. He, like, this has nothing to do with him.
He doesn't want anything to do with it.
It's crazy.
So, Sipwitz and Simone say they're going to go talk to Jamal. Oh, no, they say they have to get Richmond PD to move on that boy Jackson. Simone, or Sipwitz, is already kind of upset thinking that Richmond's gonna drag their feet on this. So then they go to, they then get all the information on Jackson to call Richmond PD, and then of course Richmond PD is gonna drag their feet on doing it, and Sipwitz is getting pissed while Simone is trying to talk to Richmond PD. It's probably one of
the... Is that the whole thing where he's, like, saying, like, are they saying they're not gonna extradite?
Yeah, like, it's basically Simone trying to be polite and like, hey, could you sit on this guy's house until you get the paperwork? And Sipwitz is walking around him, screaming at him, like, yeah, get off your fat asses and get some fresh air. And he's like, didn't he tell you it's a murder case? And then when Simone gets off the phone...
Diplomacy.
When Simone gets off the phone, Sipwitz is like, how'd you do with him? Which is hilarious.
Do you think Simone would be able to solve cases quicker and maybe better sometimes if Sipwitz wasn't his partner?
I think it depends on the situation. Because I think Sipwitz sometimes gets places with interviews and stuff that Simone doesn't.
Oh, okay, interesting.
So
elaborate.
Well, like there's been interrogations and interviews where Sipwitz kind of has control, and Simone takes the back seat, and it doesn't happen as often as the other way. But I do think they have a good repartee, and they get it done well together. This episode kind of throws that out the window with what happens next with Jamal.
Have a little good rat-a-tat.
But yeah, they when they come at it together, they get it. I think they get it done faster. I just think that you have to deal with Sipowicz's
emotions.
Yeah, and Sipowicz's like weird nonsense, which I think Simone is willing to do because sometimes Sipowicz just gets like a crazy thing done a lot faster than everybody else. Because, you know, he's willing to hit people. Anyway, when they go to talk to Jamal, Simone is making sure that Sipwitz actually plans to do the call to the doctor, and Sipwitz...
Yeah, that's one thing about this episode. I'm glad, like, Sipwitz finally told Simone what was happening, because now Simone, other than his wife, is gonna be another person who can hold him accountable, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And make sure that he's taking care of himself.
And Sipwitz said that he gave his word to Sylvia that he would do it, and he just wants to work because it keeps his mind off.
Shit. He got married and gave his word to Sylvia, and he still wasn't going to tell her about the prom date, so that don't mean shit.
When they go to talk to Jamal, Jamal is immediately pissed off because he's been sitting for 2.5, as he puts it, 2.5 damn hours.
You'd be sitting at home too. Like, what's the difference?
That's rude.
Like, it's not like he's gonna be walking around the house at home either. Like, he's gonna be sitting.
Wow.
Sorry, that was rude.
If anything, it's a change of scenery. Oh wow.
Yeah, if anything, like, he's in a new place. Like,
lots of new interesting.
It's new walls to stare at. Like,
wow. fucking
crack
well.
Some holes he can compare. I don't know, dude.
He's immediately pissed at Sipowicz and recalls a time where Sipowicz, while drunk, pulled him out of a car and tossed it just because he was with a white woman. He won't talk with Sipowicz in the room, so Sipowicz says, "Fine, I'll excuse myself so I can get away, so I can leave the crippled Don Rickles."
I know it's not, like, fucked up to say, but, like, can he, like, is it okay to keep calling him crippled?
Well, it's also interesting because in the scene before it, I think this was actually kind of cool, the show. In the scene before it, they kind of talk about, oh, Sipowicz has changed so much, like, in his humanity, where they're like, oh, he's now married to Sylvia, he has this good friend in Bobby, he's, keeping his word, and he's, like, kind of feeling his emotions rather than drinking them away. And then he gets into this room, and there's a guy that's like, hey, remember when you were fucking drunk all the time and super goddamn racist? And he's like, oh, yeah, I did a lot of things I wasn't proud of. He's like, oh, cool, was that one of them? And then he's like, hey, man, I'm sorry, geez. And he's like, I guess I was just born cranky. And it was like, holy shit, like, this guy... It's like, sure, you've changed a little bit, Sipowicz, but you still got some fucking things to apologize for, and then eventually he just leaves the room.
But that's a big change, too, because normally he would have fought to stay in the room and then gotten mad at Bobby.
Yeah, but this time he's like...
And would have been like, you know, we have to control the room, you know, you can't let him dictate blah, 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 and you did by letting him... He didn't do that. He just kind of trusted Bobby and was like, all right, I'll go. That's growth.
That is growth. It's slow, but it's growth. Simone offers him a drink. And I kind of liked it because he was like, can I get you something to drink? He's like, after 2.5 damn hours. And then Simone's like, yeah, after 2.5 hours, you want something to drink? And he's like, yeah, I'll take a Sprite with a straw. And he gets it for him. Simone gets the drink.
Isn't there a weird, like... moment where he asks for the straw, or is that something different?
Well, he does ask, and then I think it just kind of acknowledges, like, oh yeah, he needs a straw because he can't drink
it
without
one. He can't use his arms and his legs.
So while Simone is getting that thing, Sipowicz lets him know that they want this Antoine Chantain for like 4 other shootings, so it'd be really cool if they can get this guy.
Chantain.
Yeah, because the woman said Champagne, which shows how well she knew the dude. She didn't even know his last name. Simone goes to talk to him.
Imagine going out with a girl twice, right?
Yeah.
And then one day, a pack of, like, girls just grab you and rape you with a dildo and keep telling you, it's for this girl. Like, it's because you're dating this girl. And you're like, what the fuck, dude? I just went out with her twice. Like, I don't even know her middle name. And, like, you just get raped. Like, that's a crazy scenario.
Also, where'd you get this bitch-ass small dildo? Anyway.
oh, my God.
Simone gets him the drink and actually dabs down his lips after letting him use the straw. And then Simone slow burns him into possibly admitting Antoine shot him. It's a really good scene, and I don't really want to summarize it because it's two good actors. And Giancarlo and Jimmy Smits are doing cool shit here. But basically you find out that after being shot like that and put in the wheelchair, he has turned to Jesus. Basically believes Antoine will get what God has got for him. Then Simone exploits that to try and get him to admit that it was Antoine. And it ends with him praying to God, asking if this cop is... being used as God's instrument. I would say my favorite point of the conversation is Jamal keeps saying, all you got is what's in the chair, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, that was a cool little scene.
You just got what's in the chair. The end of the episode, there's two different moments. Sipowicz, it shows him calling the doctor with Sylvia in the room and then getting a procedure for the next morning. At
which
like
9:15. Which is crazy.
That they got it next morning?
Yeah, like there's no way they would just give it to him next morning.
Apparently they had a cancellation. Sipowicz makes the joke, yeah, maybe he croaked.
Because what are they doing? They want him to go in to do what, a biopsy on it?
No, it's just like an MRI or a CAT scan. I can't remember which one. So I mean, if someone canceled, then they have the appointment. But it is pretty
true, true. Because they talk about how, because he talks about how he doesn't want to be in any confined spaces. That's right.
Yeah, he's a claustrophobic. The other story with Russell Kirk and Medavoy involves Mr. Bruce Clayton. They go to what seems like a clinic, I guess.
Oh, the most boring man in the universe, Bruce Clayton.
And they talk to Bruce Clayton because the DOA Robert McClure, who they call Bob, don't know why I wrote down Robert, he's shot in the gut, and it looks like a robbery because there's drugs and stuff spilled all over the place. And Bruce tells a story that he came down to find him, and two black gentlemen were running out. They find a Desert Eagle with one expended round in the trash, which Bruce mentions, oh yeah, that's mine, that I co-own with the dude who's dead. That's weird.
Just a little.
Then they're like, oh, well, we're going to need that camera footage. And then Bruce is like, yeah, I already looked at it, and there was a malfunction. So it's immediately suspicious.
Yeah, but I just love the way he kind of like, I know the actor is making a choice how he's playing this character, but the way he's like delivering all of his lines, what's the word? It's like he's in a trance. It's just interesting.
I wrote down and then underlined it. He's too cool with everything that's happening.
Yeah, like like when they're like, "Hey, we need that footage." He kind of is like, all right, oh cool, cool. Yeah, yeah. I already looked at it. It's messed up." Like it's messed up. It's all good though. Like
yeah, we're all good.
No big deal here.
The next scene after they're like, okay, Bruce, well, we're going to have to talk to you down at the station, and everyone's immediately suspicious. A guy named Jay came into the precinct to give a statement about what happened, and that's what Fancy did. Fancy took Jay's statement, who says he saw a woman come running out of the thing. He basically just wants some fucking money out of the police department, because he mentions it like four times. And
this is the guy who took Fancy's statement, right?
Fancy took Jay's statement. And when Fancy's like, well, how do you know it was a woman? He's like, I know it was a woman from her body. And it's like, okay, yeah. Jesus.
Okay, creep.
And the dude just wants cash. He just keeps wanting cash. When Medavoy, Kirkendall, and Russell come back, Medavoy takes Bruce to the coffee room and then tells him, if you don't have a passion for cream filling, please save that for me, which is very Medavoy.
Oh, so annoying. Like, we all work with that guy who, it's like, bro, you're at work. Like, let's focus on the job and not the fucking donuts. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's always that, like, one person where you're like, look, dude, I get it. You like cream-filled donuts. Today's not the day, though. Like,
did you?
If you don't get a cream-filled donut, it's okay. Like, let's just worry about, like, the murder we have going on right now.
Anyway, they talk to Fancy, and Fancy says, oh, yeah, I got a guy who came in and says a woman ran away. And they put it together like, oh, that's who this dude is covering up for, because there's a lot of holes in his story. And he erased the tape of the incident. And then as they leave to go talk to Bruce, that's when Medavoy finds it necessary to rant about Nixon.
Yeah, like, I just feel like this was an old white writer just wanting to get his, like, thoughts on Nixon out.
They confront Bruce Clayton on the truth, and I wrote this down right now because I was like, did I see this dude in something? I haven't. His name is John Thaddeus, and I haven't seen him in anything except possibly L.A. Noir. But
oh, he was in that game?
Yeah, I think he's in that game. He was in
that really shitty game?
He was in Sea of Love, 24, and Goliath, and some things, but yeah, he's...
Sea of Love? What the fuck is Sea of Love, dude?
That's an Al Pacino movie.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I'm not well-versed in my Pacino.
Anyway, they confront Bruce on the woman leaving the building, and he just gives it up immediately. He says that it was a woman named Val Dixon who was involved in a affair with Rob McClure, and she cut it off, and Rob was harassing her. Robert McClure.
All right. So Bruce Clayton said that it was the guy who got shot was shot, because I get confused with the storyline because there's like so much involvement with people. So Bruce Clayton is saying that the guy got shot by a woman who works there.
Mm-hmm.
They were messing around, and they stopped, and he kept harassing her.
Yeah, basically. And he didn't see the shooting. He just came down to see her running away, so then he staged it like a robbery. Because he was, like, on her side. And kind of felt like she was getting way too stressed out by this dude. So he just kind of covered up for her. And he thought it was gonna... He says, I had no idea she threw away the gun. I didn't even know that was involved. Because they asked him, like, are you sure you didn't see the murder? Are you sure you didn't know this? And he's like, no, I didn't know any of that. I just erased the tape and made it look like a robbery.
Doesn't erasing the tape, isn't that going to get him, like, jail time? Shouldn't that get him jail time? Anyways, doesn't
matter. That's tampering with evidence. I'm pretty sure that is a crime.
That's all a moot point. Anyways.
Val comes in, the woman, Val Dixon, with her husband, Roland, who I just wrote is a bit of a bitch, and you kind of feel that the second he walks in.
But you know what he was doing, Kirk?
What was he doing?
He was rolling, 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 rolling.
Well, they separate Val from Roland, and they bring her into a room to to confront her with what they know.
Sorry, I've been on a biscuit kick lately. So,
I mean, aren't we always on a biscuit kick? Isn't
just
it
getting back deep into them jams? You know.
Once they tell her, "Oh, we know you had an affair with Bob. We know that you went to see him." She admits to everything that happened and said that Bob basically told her to come down. And when she got there, he had a gun on her and said, "You're not leaving me," and threatened to kill her. So it was like, "You're right, I love you," hugged him, then took away the gun, and then it just went off. And then he slumped down and died. And she just ran away. And then she was shocked that Bruce had covered up all that shit for her.
Yeah, he kind of did that. He kind of went out on his own and did that, right?
Yeah, she had nothing to do with it. So then they go to tell Roland. It's so funny because they're like, "Yeah, your wife just admitted to..." Your wife just admitted to murdering Bob McClure, and then he's like, "So can she come home?" No, Roland, she can't.
That's not how it works, Roland.
And then he, like, just cries, and he asks if he could see her one more time, and...
"You're gonna have to make your own din-din tonight, my man.
Looks like you're having takeout.
And you're eating alone for the rest of your life."
Well, like, that's the thing. If fucking Russell's mom can get off killing Russell's dad, this woman's gonna get off of this. Right? Like, in a fair world? Like, it doesn't make...
She doesn't have a police officer daughter.
Yeah, that's true.
This bitch is just...
just nobody. The next scene, Medavoy is talking to Abby, who is... as you remember, Medavoy has a child with a lesbian somewhere that he ignores his two children he made with his former wife.
But we never see Abby again.
Nope, it's all phone calls.
It's all phone calls because she lives 3 hours away.
She's also living off that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 and 3 money, dude. She don't need no NYPD Blue.
Oh, that's true. That's right. She's April.
And those movies made gangbusters. Anyway, he's on the phone with Abby. He doesn't hang up with her, which is hilarious for what happens in the scene. And Bruce Clayton comes up the stairs into the door. And he's like, oh, you have her. And then he's like, "Look, I think you need to stop stressing her out. And I think you need to take the cuffs off and let her leave." And he has his hand in his pocket. And everybody's like, "Hey, Bruce. Hey, calm down there, buddy."
Yeah, he comes in. He comes in real hot. He comes in real swim fan-like.
He comes in real swim fan-like.
I don't know if you're going to recognize this one, but he had, like, the Steve Blackman goatee.
The Steve Blackman?
Yeah, you remember that He was a wrestler.
Oh my gosh, of all the things ever that you pull out, Steve Blackman the wrestler?
His gimmick was that he, like, was a martial artist.
Yes, I know exactly who you're talking about.
But he had, like, that dark, thick goatee, and that's what this guy kind of had going on for him. He had that Steve Blackman goatee.
Anyway, yeah, Bruce Clayton, going full Blackman, he walks in, and he's like, "I think you need to stop with the stress." And even Val is like, "You can't help me, Bruce. You should just, like, go home."
Even Val's like, "Look, I know I'm in trouble. Like, I know I'm not getting out of this, so..."
And they're like, Bruce, take your hand out of your pocket. And then he goes, I've got a gun in this pocket. Hey, wrong answer. Not something you say in a room full of cops. And
yeah, especially have just asked you to take your hand out of your pocket.
And then he takes the gun out of his pocket and Medavoy shoots him. Just straight up shoots him. And then there's a really long scene where Dolores is just screaming and Jill's trying to calm her down. Fancy comes up the stairs to check on the dude. Simone comes up the stairs to check on the dude. And then Sipowicz comes out of the bathroom, like, with his gun trying to pull up his pants and shit. Which is kind of funny. But yeah, just
to... Is it weird that, like, okay, the gun goes off, right?
Yeah.
No one else really pulls their gun out but Sipowicz.
Well, no, what's his name did? Fancy did at the top of the stairs that were going up. He pulls his out and then, like, gets on the other side of the wall. Yeah, everybody else kind of has it holstered. They have it holstered, but their hand is on it. But I just love how Sipowicz's
pants aren't even on.
He has his gun in his hand. His small six-shooter, which is kind of funny, too.
Yeah, and for, like, loving his gun, he's got such a bitch gun, too.
Oh, man. The end of the episode, Simone and Russell are laying in bed, and Russell's trying to call Medavoy to thank him for shooting the man. And she asks about Sipowicz, and then comments like, oh, yeah, he always acts weird. And then she asks Simone how he moved Jamal, and he's like, I don't know. And then she's like, you know what, how about a hand job? And just starts grabbing on his doink. So it's kind of a weird ending to the episode, because Simone's just sitting there, shirtless.
So,
and she's trying to start a conversation about anything, and then he's like, oh, I don't really want to talk. She's like, okay, I'll grab your dick.
So this was like, NYPD Blue was like one of the most popular TV shows of its time, right?
Yeah.
And you're only really going to like keep doing things that the audience likes, right?
Yeah.
So like, did America at that time just love the intimacy between these two?
I guess so. They loved when they were boning, man.
Because it's, like, all the time.
I just love, because when I was younger, because we watched this when we were, like, looking back, we watched this when we were pretty young, considering the content. I just love all the things I missed, because I didn't understand how sex worked. And, like, in that scene, it's clearly she just went down and grabbed his mini Simone. Like, it's so funny how she's like, oh, I guess the world's busy. And then you're like, okay, just grab it on his dick. And Simone, who seems pretty detached and, like, pretty spaced out, is like, okay, I can get down with dick grabbing. Let's party. It's just very funny as an ending of an episode.
Yeah, he had a pretty emotional, crazy, like, interview with that Jamal kid. And like, a whole day of just, like, craziness, yeah. It's just...
And then Russell's like, dick grabbing? 100%.
Just needed that joystick, you know?
Anyway, is there anything else about this episode?
Didn't she just lose a baby? Right? Like, and she's like, ready. I can't say what it's like or how it feels like. She literally just, like, it felt like she needed a day.
Well, it's been weeks because we watched these super close together, but it's been at least a couple weeks. Because she was out for a couple weeks from work. Remember, they said she had, like, the flu?
Was she out a couple days? I don't remember. It's just, like, they made it feel like in an episode that all she needed was, like, a day.
Well, she needed a day just to talk to Bobby about it, and then there was a couple of days she wasn't at work, because they mentioned that, and then now...
That's right, then her and Kirkendall had that weird conversation.
Yeah, so it's
where Kirkendall basically said that, like, if nature doesn't think you're ready for a baby, then you're not.
Well, she didn't say that. She just kind of confirmed it.
No, I have to look it up. She says something weird like that, where she basically tells Diane, like, it's not your fault you lost the baby. And nature basically says, like, if you're not ready, you're not ready. But then it's not your fault. Like, one day you'll be ready. It's like some weird thing, like... I have to look it up, because it tripped me out when she said it. I was like, wait, what?
Anything else about this episode before we call it quits?
No, not really. I mean, like, the whole donut thing really resonated with me for some reason. I know it's stupid, but, like, it just took me back to, like, working at, like, my last job, and every Monday we'd have donuts or some shit, and, like, we're trying to talk about serious stuff, and, like, some guy's freaking out because there's no chocolate Long John. It's like, hey, Jerry, had a chocolate Long John every Monday for the last 6 years. It's okay if you don't have one today. Like, chill out.
We had that kind of drama at my work where somebody always took the maple Long John and then another person would just take that to antagonize people. And I was like, guys, it's fucking free donuts! It's free donuts! Guess what? You can have one or don't. Those are the options. Complaining about them isn't one.
Yeah, it's not like someone went to buy you a donut. It's not like someone asked you your order for the donut.
No.
And got you it specifically and then someone took it. Somebody brought in a bunch of free donuts. There happened to be one that you liked that's not there anymore. Fuck over it.
Anyway, every episode of NYPD Blue Bulls is on AsherBrothersPodcast.com, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, where you find a podcast. We're on Instagram at AsherBrothersPodcast, Twitter at AsherBrosPod. Keep safe, socially distance, wash your hands, cover your face, everybody, and have a good one. Peace. Thank you for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. If you have a moment, please rate and review the show on whatever platform you're using to listen to it. It's how people see the show, and more importantly, might end up seeing the best show ever, NYPD Blue. If you need more NYPD Blue in your life, there's a couple of books out there. True Blue, written about the first couple seasons from creators and consultants. What Would Sipowicz Do?, a collection of articles written about the show. And Gene Kendall's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue on Amazon for 99 cents. As of right now, NYPD Blue, the entire series, is on Hulu for binging. It is available in some territories on DVD, but Hulu is the cheaper option. Special note, if you are legally able, please vote in the upcoming election if you live in America. Voting is very important, and you should do it until it becomes illegal. Thank you once again for listening to the show. Please distance socially, wash your hands, make good health decisions, and be decent to one another. Peace.